Kayak anglers of the internet, welcome back to the Advanced Kayak Angler Podcast. I got it out today without messing it up.
That's the best introduction ever.
Yes. How you doing, Kurt?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I'm digging this warm weather we've been having. I tell you what, 80 degrees, it feels really nice outside.
Yeah, it's like 80s, all like mid-80s here all week.
I'm a little farther north, so we get like 2 days of 80s, and then it's like 60s, and I'm just happy that we have 80 degrees here, so once in a while, at least.
I signed up for the Bassmaster Gunnersville event today, and they'll all be gone by then, which I wish I wouldn't, because like post-spawn on Gunnersville, I'm like, I'm okay, but like spawn, pre-spawn, oh yeah, but
I need to get signed up for that.
I'm going to be out of my element, so we'll see. I'm going to do the best I can.
You'll cash another check.
Yeah, I won this weekend, like we were saying beforehand. It was a joint event. We have this. I'd been talking about it before. It's really become like my favorite event of the year. It's North Alabama Kayak Anglers, Coleman Kayak Anglers, and Iron City Kayak Anglers for a $40 super regional group event, because it.
Wow.
That lake fits within all, like barely at the, like within the, in our regions, it's like barely in each region, our club's things. And then there was a $20 Major League Fishing side pot and a $100 Alabama Kayak Anglers Tour tournament on top of that. So it's like $160. I mean, it's like big money event.
Yeah. And,
yeah, so it was a good time, man. Did good. My buddy Chad won. Very happy for him. I lost like three in the last 15 minutes that any one of those three would have done it. So three fish in the last 15 minutes, any of them cost me $1,000.
Yeah. Well, I know your pain, man.
He said he lost a nine, though. He got it to the net on Smith Lake, too, which is, I didn't know they got that big on Smith Lake. He lost it at the net. He hit the hook out with the net.
Oh, my God.
So it's perfect. Like, I can't really, I could have won it, but he could have won it, too. So, yeah, he won. I'm happy for him. But yeah, this week, man, we have a great, I'm really excited to talk to him. We've got Andy Dill, the bearded paddler from Arkansas. How you doing, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. One of the best looking beards in the business right here.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. There's some competition out there. I had an interview with Jameson Redding the other day, and me and Jameson both sport a good beard, but he had a buddy of his that was cooking steaks in the background, and he had a beard that just came down to here.
But that would take so much work, though, you know. But like, once you get past a certain amount, then you gotta start like really brushing it. And
I'm not a product guy, but getting past the what I call the itch phase, that's the trick. And a buddy of mine was telling me about beard oils, and I'm like, well, like I don't put anything up here. Why would I put something here? And he goes, no, like that will take care of the itch, you know, the dry skin. So I did that. It was a game changer. And so now my wife will always, she'll attest to this, where before, you know, I'm just, you know, I keep my hair pretty short up top and, you know, throw a hat and a shirt on and I'm out. And then now it's like, okay, you know, I'm doing this. If I get out of the shower, I'm blow drying it and all that, because if I don't, this just poofs out, and it's not, almost not even worth having. But
so now that your nickname is a bearded paddler, are you like stuck with a beard forever?
I've actually joked about that too. Whether I said, yeah, Nat is like, I told her, like, you know, I can't shave this now, right? And she's seen what I look like without the beard. She's 100% on board with that. Because, I don't know, I've got a lot of salt in this beard. So, when I shave it, I cut off like 20 years. So when I get a little older, I may want that a little bit more, but it's here to stay. As hot and muggy as the summers get to, you know, around here, it holds up fine. It's nothing to it. I've had it for a while now. I actually trim it and shape it a little bit more. Otherwise it would be down here, because I've had it for a couple of, you know, a few years now.
So, but besides a beard, tell people who you are and what you do, man.
Yeah.
And I'll say we found you. Well, you know, me and Kurt found you from the YouTube channel, The Bearded Paddler, which is, you have a real talent for talking about, and you're obviously very knowledgeable on everything you talk about, but a real, real talent. So if you're not subscribed to this channel, go do it. I really enjoy sitting down because you'll, it's kind of like vlog style where you'll just get on a topic, talk through it. And it's like really super informative. So if you haven't already subscribed to his channel, go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're new to kayak.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And you cut down that bell curve. You know what I mean? You can really get right to the meat of the issues.
Cause it's intimidating. You know, and when I train people in the store, I always tell them, it's like, if you're not asking the right questions to people and they're just looking, they're plastic boats. Like, it's just, you know, why is one $300 and one $3,000? And what's the difference? What makes one company good and one company maybe not so good? And I always tell people there's a butt for every seat. So my favorite and least favorite thing is the same thing, is you go on like those Facebook groups, and it's usually those beginner kayak groups, and they say, hey, I'm 6 foot, 200 pounds. What's the best first kayak for me? And then I'm just like, I'm bracing because I'm waiting for just the slew of comments all the way from Lifetime and Pelican all the way up to Hobie Pro Anglers with the motors and the, like, it's just everybody throwing what they like and what they're in or what their dream kayak setup is. And without really just asking the questions. And I even did a video here talking about frustrations with pro staff. So we have pro staff, every shop, you know, like you guys know, and some of them, I think, take it a little bit too far. I've actually seen some with certain companies, and I'm not going to throw shade on them here, but
shade.
Yeah, I mean, they get on these groups, and it's almost like cyberbullying. You know, someone gets on there, is like, hey, you know, I'm looking for a good waterproof battery box, and they say, well, have you tried this kayak? I mean, it makes no sense to them whatsoever. And, but yeah, they, you know, when they come into our shop, you know, I manage a store called Ozark Mountain Trading Company. We have a few locations. We're one of the largest kayak retailers in the country. So that's kind of my unfair advantage. You know, I've got access to everything. And, it was not this last February before that I started doing it. And what was happening was, it was winter, it was really slow, and I was getting a little stir crazy. And so I noticed a lot of customers coming in that previous year saying, you know, you're going through the questions, you know, what kind of water are you floating on? Is it river or lakes? You know, what budget do you want to stay within? You know, are you fishing? Are you recreational floating? You know, just kind of getting the baseline of what they were looking for. And I said, well, we saw this guy on YouTube, and he said that this kayak is really good for this. I'm like, well, it's not really true. And then you're having to overcome that mountain, you know, because they saw somebody with a cell phone that was able to upload it on the internet. And, you know, it's just kind of like, well, shoot, I got to thinking, I'm like, well, shoot, I've got everything here. I can just talk about this stuff. So I just took my cell phone out and just started filming. And it was the first kayak I did a video on. It was the Bonafide RVR 119, which I think is probably the best river fishing kayak for me personally. But yeah, it's like, it was the first one on the floor. Nobody else had one. I think Bonafide hadn't even put a video out on it yet. So like, shoot, I'll just put it up there. And it got like 10,000 views in a month. And I was like, well, shoot, this is nice. And then the next video I put out got like 20 views. So I was like, I was just thinking like, oh, this is easy.
Weird how that works.
Talking about this being so rough, but,
that's YouTube, man.
But yeah, man, I was just a content monster that first 6 months. So, we carry about a dozen different brands. We pretty much will have 1,000 kayaks in stock at all times or more. So there's a lot of different stuff I can do it on. I literally have just content for days. And about 6 months, I was doing like 3-4 videos a week and doing shorts, and got monetized. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I can start reinvesting, you know, so getting better audio, getting better video, and start trying to learn some stuff and then making it more enjoyable instead of just a dude, you know, my point of view. And did you see my finger, you know, just pointing out stuff and, you know, and then you hear a feedback, which is great. I love the feedback. I try to, you know, respond to pretty much everything, but, yeah, if someone say, hey man, this saved me a ton of money, or this really helped out, and that just kind of refueled it. And, you know, and then you get people reaching out to you, like, you know, Chad Hoover and, you know, Wendell Fishing and you guys. And yeah, it's just, it's fun. But one thing I've learned is I'm an extremely competitive person, and the kayak fishing world, you know, with the exception of just, you know, a few groups here and there, it's pretty close, tight knit. It's about the community and collaboration and helping each other out. It's completely different from anything else I've been involved with. So I've just really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do have to say one thing about the pro staffers and, or just people that try to promote something that they, yeah, you know, that they have. If you're looking at that stuff, like it's so crazy. Like somebody will say, this kayak is the best. I'm thinking,
yeah,
there's no way you can really think that. Like you could have never have owned other kayaks.
Yeah.
To have that, you know, that's your. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like not only is it not the right kayak forever for everyone, but it's not the best kayak for specifically what you're trying to do. Like you should try out some other kayaks too, because you're promoting something that even if you aren't on a pro team, which that I could understand more, not to that extent, but yeah, I mean, people with not much knowledge out there in
groups on
YouTube that.
But the thing is, too, I mean, say, so like if you're in, say, a bona fide or a native or a Hobie and you're fishing out of that thing, you're using that thing daily and you're that pro staff guy and somebody's asking about that kayak. Absolutely. You are the hands on. You are the and I've told people and I've had discussions with our own pro staff people in the past is you're an ambassador to the sport. You're not there just to sell that one kayak, but if you get a nibble on that hook for that kayak, you're the professional. You are the guy that to go to. It's fun to talk to people on, you know, yeah, they already want that kayak. So now they want to know, how do I rig this up? How do you do your fish finder? How do you do your sonar? How do you do your motors? Where do you store your battery? Where do you store your tackle at? And, you know, and I don't blanket that across everybody, because there are some phenomenal pro staffs out there. And the best ones, in my opinion, you know, so if you're a pro staff with a bona fide or a Hobie, knowing the lineup. So if you get somebody in there that's just casual, hey, I'm just going to go out every weekend or every other weekend or once a month. Yeah, they may not need a pro angler. You know, they may like the Compass or the Outback or even the Passport. You know, they may not need all the bells and whistles that come with some of those kayaks. But and that's kind of the challenge with me in the industry is, you know, people are always looking at that top. So if they think of Hobie, they think of a $5,000 kayak, or they look at Jackson and they think of a $4,000 pedal drive. You know, and a lot of these companies have a lot of expansive lineups that are constantly evolving and constantly coming out with new stuff. And there's something for everybody out there, whether you're looking at budget friendly or top of the line, or even that middle tier, which I feel like a lot of people fit into that middle tier. Cause you know, I've been in a Hobie, I enjoyed it, but me personally, that's not what I buy. But if somebody's looking for serious competitive tournament fishing, everyone's pretty much got those, you know, from the Jacksons to the Old Towns to the, you know, everyone's got that.
And the sport, there's always going to be more people at the bottom of the pyramid than there are like at the top who are hardcore tournament guys doing it every weekend out on the road. And there's, you know, 10 or 20 to one of the people who are, hey, I like catching fish. I want to pedal, not paddle. Yeah.
And that's what makes the sport healthy, is having having a pyramid like that.
Yeah.
You know, you have the serious guys at the top, because if you lose that base, that's a big deal.
Yeah. That's very true. That's a very good point. And another thing too is budget in kayak fishing is not the biggest thing. So especially guys that are used to being in a boat and maybe they dip their toes in the kayak and they decide they like it. Well, you're looking at a top of the line kayak for you know, $4,500, $5,000, and that may be more than you need. And I'm seeing that a lot too, where maybe budget isn't a big deal to this person. So they go out and maybe they watch me on YouTube or somebody else where they've got the motors and the sonar and all this stuff. And they go out and they do that. And it just kills me to see that, where they've got this thing rigged up before it even gets wet. And then they find out, well, maybe it's not my thing, or maybe this is too heavy for what, you know, just me going out every now and then. And you'll see that on Marketplace. You know, someone's got a kayak on there trying to sell for $8,000 because they've got the light and the two motors and the power poles and the forward facing sonar. And that's another thing I always try to prevent people from doing is, you know, what do you need this kayak to do? Get something you can kind of grow into, but you don't need to go like way, way far unless you're looking to get into competitive fishing. So
it's so hard to get, like, yeah. You might, just on the kayak itself, you might get a good return if you keep something for a while and then decide to sell it. But it's the same way with cars. If you customize it and you add all these other things, the level of return on that is so low.
That's a good point too, because, you know, if you can separate it out and sell it, because some people just want to get a motor and maybe they don't want to spend a brand new retail for the motor. Maybe they want to get one used. Not everybody wants that specific kayak with all of that stuff on it. So if you can take the motor and the battery out and, you know, the kits out and, you know, maybe the Black Pack Pro and all this stuff out and just get back to that base kayak. And I think that's going to be easier in the future, because a lot of these kayaks are coming out now where you can very easily rig them up, you know, like your simple DIY guy in the garage, instead of having a shop doing it, you know, especially those of us who don't have a shop close by, you got these little access plates on some of these kayaks.
Like where the Titan and the Bonafides.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's a big deal, because you can just slap a plate on it, drill a hole. If you mess up the plate, just get a new plate. It's like a buck or two, and then, you know, slap it back on there and try again. I see people do it too. And I was kind of that way when I first started doing it. Is that first hole you drill into your kayak, you're shaking at that first, you know, just dip. And once you do it, and then it's like, it just opens up
holes everywhere.
Wow, you got the Swiss cheese there.
I mean, that's exactly how I try to rig mine up, is try to not drill any holes into it.
Yeah.
You know, because I know I'm going to eventually sell it and the next guy's not going to want whatever crazy modification I decided to do that year. Because every year, like you said, kayaks are constantly evolving.
Yeah.
Every year, even though I've had the same kayak for 3 years or 4 years now, I'm constantly re-rigging it.
Yeah.
You know, squeezing out a little bit more performance, squeezing out just a little bit more comfort.
Yeah, and it's a sickness too. I mean, I'm passionate about the sport. I love to fish. I don't film fishing so much. That's kind of my private thing. So, you know, not that I would be against it, but there's thousands of people that have kayak fishing channels, and I just, you know, I'll talk about the walkthroughs, and then I'll do on the water tests, but it's pretty basic stuff. But, you know, working in the paddle shop, you know, working in the paddle sports industry doesn't cure you of that. It makes it worse. So, like, I know about all the cool stuff coming down the road, and I'm thinking, man, this thing I bought last year is kind of, may need to think about some things. And, you know, that's something I've always tried to be careful with, is, you know, knowing what I really want and what I think is cool are two different things usually. So, because I'm not a competitive fisherman. I get out as much as I can. But like I said, this tournament we got going on this month, I was just talking to my wife about that too. She's in it too. And I was like, well, we may fish, but I may kind of do a video series where I'm doing a different kayak each day I'm going out, and then talking about the layout and how, you know, I like this one because there's a place you can put your catch board and your tackle storage and all this. And, you know, having a layout, because all of them look great on the showroom floor when you're talking about it. They've all got a bunch of features, but it really is kind of, it's like a glove, you know, it's not going to fit everybody. You know, I've gotten into some kayaks before where I've got a few rods and my measuring board, and like, I have no idea where to put some of this stuff. Rods are pretty easy, 'cause you know, if you got a crate set up back there, or everyone's pretty much got those flush mount rod holders in them. But yeah, there's, and I think that's where the industry is going to, is easily motorized, forward facing sonar is here to stay. I know that's been a hot topic this year with like Bassmaster, you know, video game fishing, but you know, the first time somebody took an electronic on the water to find fish, they were probably having the same conversation. Now everybody's got it. So I think you're going to start to see that come through in the kayak industry, because they try to be proactive as they can, but it's a pretty reactive industry. So, you know, if somebody's saying, hey, I want this, and there's enough of them out there and they, you know, they're going to buy stuff, yeah, they're going to make something for it. So it's going to be really interesting. I think in the next 5 years, where we're at versus where we're at today.
And think, yeah, about, I mean, 5 years ago from now.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was about to say.
I mean,
I had a Dragonfly 7, like pro, Dragonfly 7 pro 5 years ago. And I thought I was the dude.
Yeah.
Like, I was one of the only people with electronics on their kayak around here. And now it's like, you know, people are zipping past me. And the two, three, we've had people with three graphs on before. Kurt's got two live scopes. I mean, it's people have it all, you know. It's really expanded. It's crazy how far, like you said, how far it's come.
Our best-selling item here in the
last... I'm interested to see the next 5 years, like you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really going to change. I think it's really going to change with the advent of motors, because we're just now starting to see kayaks really built for motors. Like, that's like a very recent thing.
Yeah. And spot lock, I mean, and again, you know, that you kind of get into the discussion sometimes, why don't you just buy a boat type thing? But you're talking about like some of the kayaks out there, you can build and have a spot lock motor and have all the creature comforts. I mean, I can build a New Canoe Unlimited or a Bonafide PWR or even an Old Town Sportsman. You can put a trolling motor on it and with spot lock and all this capability, and you can build it out for like, you know, less than $4,000. You're looking at about $3,500, $3,600 without the battery. Mm-hmm. And then with batteries now, you're starting to see cheaper, more budget-friendly options for lithium. So instead of having that big 60, 70-pound lead-acid battery, now you got a little 20-pound lithium battery. You can just kind of and I think, you know, like Kurt said, 5 years from now, we may be laughing at what we're doing today. And just like 5 years ago, you know, prior to COVID, when things really started blowing up and you started to see a lot of companies being innovative just for the sake of being innovative. Now it's like commonplace. Now you're seeing frame seats on recreational kayaks.
Yeah.
You're seeing a lot of fishing features on the recreational kayak market. So you're starting to see some of that bleed over, which, you know, that's basically, you can call it leftover technology. You know, so stuff that was in a couple of years ago in the fishing kayaks, now just your everyday paddler just wants to float down the creek or river. Yeah, they want a comfortable seat. Yeah, they want an open deck space and adjustable foot pegs and like a lot of the, you know, a foot controlled rudder, you know, things like that. You're starting to see a lot more of. Mm.
So, what are there any other trends that maybe people that aren't in a paddle shop that you see going with companies?
Accessories. You know, to me, it's the small things that really swing big, you know, the little hinges swing big doors type discussion. I know New Canoe Unlimited, they came out with the U10 this year. It's actually a 10-foot, 10-inch kayak, so it's more like an 11-foot. But just little things like they have little padded strips on the gunnels for the 26-inch and the 32-inch catchboards. Little things like that. So things built into the kayak, and it, you know, it's somebody's thinking or somebody's giving feedback. So not everybody fishes for bass. Some guys fish for walleye in tournaments. Not everybody uses a little 26-inch. You know, some people need that 32. And the fact that you've got a kayak now that will accommodate both of them, it's a little stair step thing. So little bitty things like that excite me. I'm obviously going to prefer kayaks that paddle really well. And I always tell people, kayaks that paddle really well are especially when you're talking about motorized, that is going to be motorized really well. Because there's a lot of kayaks out there that maybe are built for the motor that may not be the best in the water. So if you're talking about a top speed of 3 miles an hour versus a top speed of, you know, 4.5 to 5 miles per hour or more, that is kind of, you know, efficiency. It's not taxing your battery. It's not taxing your motor as much. You're getting more speed and you're just enjoying your time out on the water. Worst case scenario, if your motor breaks down or if your battery goes out, you can paddle it and you're not going to hate life. You know, it's, and I'm talking about namely, you know, the Ascend 133. So that was,
I was just thinking that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, again, there's people that have them that love them and more power to them. It's just, that is the convenience factor. So that's another thing that marketing and, you know, the fact that, hey, I don't have to do this. I can just go to a big box store and they can rig it up for me and I'll just take it home. Well, yeah, that's very convenient and it's cheap.
That's
but
cheap.
I've paddled one of them and I tell you what, it is, the kayak itself was 125 pounds, just the hull. The flexing of that kayak, I mean, we repair. So I see all of these kayaks when they come in after moderate use and you'll see a lot of the same problems, you know, the deck cracking where it's pulling from the gunnels. And, you know, I've got a 150 pound guy that works at the shop where he walks on that kayak and it's flexing. I'm like, good Lord. It's like me being the size dude I am. I don't even want to get on it. But just putting a motor on it, you know, there's time. Well, I get like 3 miles an hour on it. I was like, man, like there's a lot of kayaks out there that maybe $200 or $300 more, and you can get a really quality, you know, it's going to skim across the water really nicely. And, you know, and that's what a lot of people, or at least the thing that I try to get forward to a lot of people is sometimes the ability to go from maybe a lower end on the quality to a higher end, it's not a fortune. It's usually a couple $100. So whatever your budget is today, you know, a month or two, yeah, it's in the budget, you know, save a little bit of money and put it in there. But I always tell people the foundation, especially when you're talking about motorizing, the foundation is very, very important. It's just like a house, you know, get your foundation, you're going to start building on it and putting stuff on it. You know, you don't have to go $6,000 to get a really quality kayak. You can go just a little bit more and just those little bitty things, you know, how it goes to the water, how it's laid out, you know, how it's made, you know, obviously that all adds cost to it, but.
If you buy more of a, you know, what we would consider a name brand, like a brand that you would sell, you're going to get the resale value out of it.
Yeah.
Versus the difference of the Ascend that you would have bought. I mean, that difference in price, you're going to get that back on the resale unless you.
Yeah, you will. And, you know, if the new one's not in the books, if it's a kayak that's been around for a little bit, buy used. You know, I mean, obviously there's things to look for on used kayaks, but it's not like a car. You're not having to look through a bunch of internal parts. You know, you can kind of look at the bottom, you know, a little bit of rash is okay. But if it's got big gouges or you can see where someone's put goop or, you know, plastic welded it. Yeah. Look for stuff like that. But, you know, I would rather see someone in a quality used kayak than a new kayak. Maybe that's a little cheaper, but they've got to modify to get it to be what they want it to be. And a lot of people get in trouble after that. You know, it's like, well, I bought this kayak, but I want a higher frame seat on it. I'm like, well, you can't really do that. You can. I mean, it's a plastic boat. You can modify things, but, you know, you're changing the mechanics and you're changing the, you know, putting outriggers on something and things like that. And a lot of times $100 or the same price on the used market, they could have had something that, you know, already had all that stuff. So there's value in both markets, especially now with the used. I think the bubbles kind of burst on that market a little bit. During COVID, you saw people getting brand new prices for the used. So like you can spend, you know, $2,000 today on a kayak and then a couple of years from now get $1,900 on it because nobody could find the new ones because COVID really kind of destroyed the supply chain for a while. So, but now that's kind of burst. So
with the way inflation is now, it seems like if you buy one now, you can print, if you keep it for 3 years, it'll be worth what you pay for it. Because
inflation. When the new prices go up, that does make yours more valuable, especially when they don't change a whole lot. You know, but like you're talking about the Titan X, you know, now they got the Millennium swivel seat on it. Now they got, you know, reinforced hulls and native kind of, you know, they kind of fixed the wet deck issue that they had there for so many years. So, you know, that does kind of drop some of the previous models down a little bit, but still it's the same pedal drive. It's that same quality drive. And, you know, a lot of times you can still find those really good deals out there like that guy that bought it and he just, you know, just like motorcycles or RVs, you know, they bought it and they thought they were going to use it more, and or life happened, you know, and they just, they're trying to get rid of it. And, you know, it gets somebody into a quality piece, something that will last them a long time. When they're ready to upgrade, they've got a piece they can trade in or sell for a good price and put down towards something else. That's what I always like to see. Even somebody that's just using it every now and then, you know, you don't have to buy the top of the line thing, but there's some good used stuff out there. There's some good deals to be had right now.
For sure. So now I want to know, since you do a lot of rigging, what's the craziest thing anybody has ever had you do rigging? And you were like, nah, man, you don't want to do that. Come on. Like a tuna tower or something.
Yeah. Crazy. I put dual graphs on a Wilderness Tarpon 100. And it, yeah. Okay. He knows. So a Tarpon 100, that thing's like 30 inches wide, 10 foot long. And
super tippy to begin with.
Yes. But the guy uses it for crappie fishing, and he's a smaller guy. So it kind of worked out for him. But we had one of those old dashboards that Wilderness sold. We kind of rigged it up to fit on those tracks, and it almost made the, if he didn't have like shorter legs, you almost couldn't use the foot pegs because it doesn't sit really high. But he had these two graphs. I mean, he had it was graphs he took off his bass boat. He just wanted to put them on there so he can see the crappie stacking up. And I was like, I did it. I just told him, I wanted to take pictures of that so bad and put it on like our social media. But then I didn't want people to think, oh, we can do this. Like, let's just take it down there. But that and not so much rigging, but hauling kayaks. I sold it was the Mike Iaconelli edition Pro Angler, that red and black.
Yeah.
Guy came down from Northeast Arkansas, bought one from me, and he said he had a Kia. So when I'm thinking a Kia, I'm thinking like those little vans. I'm like, oh, okay. He had a little smart car. And I mean like this little bitty thing. And he had these homemade rigged roof rails up on top. And he had tow hooks on he had it rigged up to haul stuff, but I took a picture of it and I put it on my Instagram because it's a big long Pro Angler and a little bitty car in the middle of it. And it just, I asked him what his gas mileage was. He said he's getting about 45 miles a gallon. I was like, you're not going to get that on the way back, man. So that thing is like a sailboat on top of it.
Like a hang glider.
Yeah. And then put a 12 foot Titan, native Titan in the back of a lady's Jeep Cherokee. She came up from Central Arkansas, and it was the only place that, you know, during COVID, only place she found that had one. And so we were putting like a yoga mat on the tip of the boat because it was all the way up inside against the windshield. And she said she did all the measurements, but that boat is really deep. So that, you know, having it on the back of my truck with the bed extender so she can sit on it and hold her little dog to make sure everything fit in there good. That was probably one of the craziest things I've ever had happen there. You know, if the dog fit in there, she's going to buy it, which it did. So, you know, she took it home, but yeah.
It's important.
Yeah. Damn. Hey, different strokes for different folks. That might be her fish finder. You never know.
So yeah, you had a few. I wanted to kind of go over talk about a few topics that you've done. What do you call them? Shows? I never know what to call them. A YouTube
videos?
Yeah. Video? Yeah, just
yeah,
video.
Yeah.
All right. I'm overthinking it. Too much kayak stability. What is?
Yeah.
I mean, I want people to go to your YouTube channel and watch that. But kind of generally, what do you think? Like, because whenever I listen to it. And you definitely said a lot of new people, they want and I see it in Facebook groups all the time. What's the most stable kayak? I'm 200 pounds. Like I'm 180. I need a really stable kayak.
Yeah.
It seems like everybody starts out that way, but what is too much stability?
Well, like what you're talking about, the Ascend. So something like that, just really wide and flat, and performance is just an afterthought. You're just stable. And it's, you know, at some point, the way some of these, because manufacturers listen, they're not just, oh, let's just put this out and see how it does. No, everyone's asking about stability. So let's make something stable. and it's like a dock. It's like a floating dock that you're just paddling. So, you know, and I see it all the time where someone will come in and they're wanting something stable, and but they're on rivers and skinny water. I'm like, well, like some of these big kayaks, I always give the analogy of it's like an SUV versus a little car. Are you going to be on really windy roads and hilly road? You're not going to like that SUV or that school bus as much as you do that little car that's going to, you know, be able to maneuver and just be a joy to ride. And, you know, you're working harder. It's heavy. It's bulky. And, you know, so I always tell people, you know, you got to think about how you're transporting it. You know, do you have a trailer? Is that a big deal? If it's a heavy kayak, but you got a trailer and you're just launching into air, hey, then it's not a big deal. But a lot of people, if they're just paddling, it's very stable, but it's so sluggish that they just hate it. And then if you don't enjoy it going through the water, you're going to find reasons not to use it. So there's other kayaks that maybe maneuver and paddle or pedal a lot better, but they're still really stable. They're just not maxed out. You know, you don't need a 10 on stability when you may really like an 8 that handles really well and is easier to load. And you know, it's going to handle what you need it to do. But if you're just going stability above all else, nobody ever asks how they paddle. Nobody ever asks how they maneuver and, you know, or how fast they are. When I say speed, I'm not, you know, always try to be careful with that because it's like, well, I'm not racing. I'm like, I know that. But if you're going a mile, they average to be about 1,000 paddle strokes. So if you really break that down, if you got something that is really stable, you may be paddling 2,000. But if you got something that's stable but maneuvers really well, you might could cut that down. So that's speed. It's efficiency. It's or gas mileage, as I always call it, on your body. Your arms and shoulders are going to be really screaming at you if you got that really big kayak that's stable. But, you know, depending on what you're using it for, yeah, you can get it through the water a little bit better. It'll, you know, we cover some ground. That's why those touring kayaks where people are paddling for miles and miles, that's why they're really long and thin. They track really well. You know, they're not needing to maneuver tight quarters. You know, they're just open water. And yeah, those things are fast. You know, two paddle strokes and you're equaling about 50 on some of these other ones. So that's what I mean.
Aren't you like it can catch the wind and then put you so far over that it's more paddle strokes to even stay online, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of engineering that goes into some of those. So some of them have a little bit more of those rounded noses, so the wind resistance is minimal, but you're always going to get blown around a little bit, obviously. But some of those ones I see, they're just kind of modular looking. Like, man, it's like the wind is just going to wreak havoc. And some of these inland lakes, I mean, they get really breezy, even if there's no breeze anywhere else. Say it's like a wind tunnel in some of the places.
Yeah. What's your most popular kayak that you sell at your location?
Is it a wreck
kayak, I guess?
Yeah. Ironically, our most popular kayaks are recreational. You know, 70% of our customers are recreational paddlers. Maybe, you know, the occasional fishing trip. So recreational kayaks, the Liquid Logic Kiowa is probably the best. That's probably been our best seller. It's a frame seat on a really good paddle craft. They sell it in a 10.5 and a 12-foot kayak, you know, version of it. And then the Native Falcon, it's 11-foot kayak with, again, a frame seat on it. And it's meant to be an entry-level fishing kayak, but a recreational. Throw and go. Yeah. Yeah, they love it. Throw and go, lighter weight kayak. On the fishing kayak, it's easily the New Canoe Unlimited. Just whether someone's just paddling it around with an anchor or putting a motor on it, or maybe throwing a pedal drive. It's just, it's really, really versatile. And just, you know, it's at $17.99, you know, it's the price of certain kayaks that, you know, you may not be able to do a whole lot with, but this thing, it's made to do, you know, something you can build incrementally, which that's a real big deal.
Pedal power, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I gotta say, New Canoe, they really, some of the like foot controlled steering integration with the EPS and all that. I mean, it's really, you know, they have some slick stuff over at New Canoe for sure.
And their customer service, and that's another thing. That's something I think gets a lot of juice here the last couple of years is customer service, warranties. My experience, New Canoe, Jackson Kayak, and Native are three of the top companies with just warranties. Old Town's another one, which our shop here, just the shop I work at, we just kind of got into Old Town. I mean, I've known about them obviously, and you know, their customer service. It just we've kind of always missed it, or just kind of got, you know, the timing hadn't been right. But really excited to be dealing with them because they kind of stand behind what we stand by as a company, is American made, roto molded, quality kayaks. And you know, we at the shop that I work at, we do a lifetime hull repair warranty. So if it's cracked or punctured, we have kayaks that we can plastic weld instead of, you know, do patches on. So it just, it gives something else for our customers to look at and to say, hey, you know, the store is going to stand behind the product, and they're selling companies that stand behind the product. So the service part of it, I think, is where to me, that gets a lot more people into kayaking and kayak fishing than just YouTube videos and, you know, marketing and stuff. So
service is the end all, I think, for retail anymore.
Yeah. Well, if you're spending, especially the money,
if you've been in it for a while, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I've got customers that I tell them, you know, they have equity, you know, they bought kayaks for a long period of time. And, you know, yeah, if they're unsure about something, I'm like, well, take it for a day, you know, things like that. But, you know, you want to be taken care of. You want to, at least that's me. I'm lucky to work for a company that allows me to run a store like I want to, you know, obviously within certain restrictions. But, you know, me, if I walk into a place and I've spent, yeah, to me, a few hundred dollars is a lot of money. But if you know, if you're spending all that money, I want to feel like they value my business, as opposed to taking it off the shelf, someone scanning it, and then say, okay, I'll see you later. And you know, we chop up our warranty boats, you know, we'll take the parts and the riggings off of it. So if somebody said, hey, I've got a handle that broke, well, we'll just hand it to them. You know, just little things like that, I think really is missing, especially in the last probably 4 or 5 years, really missing in the space. You know, you go somewhere, service is just doesn't seem like it was what it used to be. You have a lot of new people doing new things. So a lot of times the people are just trying to keep their head above water. And I think service has really fell down because of that.
What are there any other misconceptions for people getting into kayak fishing that maybe, you know, people that don't work in a paddle shop see besides stability?
Yeah. You don't have to go big. There's value in every single kayak, I think. It's the biggest misconception, I think, is certain kayaks are designed for certain purposes, but they're not always communicated properly. So, you know, if you go to a big box store and you see a $300 kayak, that's probably not a kayak for big open water. That's close to shore, small bodies of water, maybe a pond hopper. You know, you don't need to buy a Hobie to throw it in a small pond and, you know, fish, or, you know, things like that. But, yeah, you know, again, you know, everyone wants to save money, and I get that. Budget is a real thing. So I never want to make people feel like they're not able to kayak fish because they don't have $1,500 burning a hole in their pocket. So that's probably it, is just not needing to go big to get into kayak fishing. Because 5 years ago, a fishing kayak was just a kayak with a pole on it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's people that's been fishing out of inflatables and canoes for decades. So the fact that they're not a real kayak fisherman because they don't have a big elaborate setup, I want to see as many people get into the sport as possible. So whether they buy it from me or the local paddle shop or the used market, whatever gets them into it is always a win. I just want to see them get into the right kayak, obviously, to keep them from getting into a dangerous situation. Because I unfortunately see that a lot. So
yeah, you know, yeah, and I saw some groups. Yeah, somebody just lost their life where they found the kayak and found the PFD, but not the person.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I hate hearing that. North Fork Lake here in just literally like just a few miles from where I live, it's the deadliest lake in Arkansas statistically. And you know, the local auxiliary, the Coast Guard, will do like a statistic sheet that they'll hand out, and they'll talk about the percentage of people that don't have their life vest on. that pass away, it's staggering. It's well over 60% here. And, you know, there's always going to be something happen that's kind of, you know, not preventable, but the amount of preventable deaths and injuries is just, it's astonishing. It really is.
Yeah. That's so sad. Like, and then people argue in Facebook groups and all, why do I need to wear a PFD? It's my choice.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, wear your PFD.
Yeah. I'm all about freedoms. Don't get me wrong, but if something happens to you, you've got people that depend on you. And I don't want, you know, and again, I'm just talking about me here, so I don't want to start a big debate online on this, but, you know, for me, a comfortable, properly fitting life vest is worth its weight. I always tell people, splurge on your life vest and your paddle, and then pretty much any kayak you have, will you'll enjoy it a lot better. But, and your PFD, that's your life. That's more important than life insurance, because that keeps you alive instead of help someone out after you pass away. And I always tell people, never assume consciousness in an emergency situation. So, you know, I know a lot of people like the low profile, the manual pull. Man, I've seen people get in some deep trouble because they couldn't reach that little pull cord, or, you know, just maybe they forgot to arm it. So those little canisters inside, they don't come off the shelf plugged in. So a lot of times people will put them on and just go out. And then when they get in the water, they say, well, this thing never inflated. I kept pulling that cord. It's like, and then when you plug it in and screw it in, I'm like, you know, it's, yeah, it I get it, but also I've got a comfortably fitting one and I enjoy it. You know, it's the same argument that people had decades ago with the seatbelt laws. You know, they say, well, this thing's not comfortable. Now I feel naked if I don't have it. So it,
I gotta say, I can't say too much there. I was probably a late adopter. Whenever I was in high school, I didn't want to like crease up my shirt and I wanted to be cool, you know, but
yeah. I was thrown from a vehicle at 18. So
it, God, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I
landed on your beard.
Yeah. I just laid on my beard, bounced back up. We'd hit a telephone pole on the driver's side headlight. It swung the back end and we went into a roll.
Wow.
And of course, you know, we're kids, you know, driving too fast and didn't have our seatbelts on. And, you know, of course I just caught that momentum and yeah, I mean, just that changed me. I mean, I'm 45 years old now. I still don't like going around curves really fast, but yeah, I mean, it little things like that. I've heard of people that do a near drowning and they said, man, I'm always going to wear my PFD now. I don't want to get to that point because, you know, I could swim well, but things happen. I had an incident. We were on the river 3 weeks ago now, Buffalo National River here. I hit a stump with a kayak that was kind of right there in the middle, but doing something stupid. But when it hit, it tipped me over and it had a claw hammer, or it had a little claw anchor on the front of it. That anchor got hooked into the tree stump and I went to, you know, and I'm not in deep water. This could have been a lot worse. So I move up there. I'm about waist deep water. It's moving. When I grab it, my lure, my treble hook lure was, you know, my poles were in the, you know, facing the front. That got caught in the rope to the anchor. When I grabbed it, I got two of them treble hooks stuck in my finger.
Yeah.
Just everything that can go wrong could go wrong. And I was sitting there thinking, it's like, you know, if I didn't have a PFD on and I'm sitting there trying to do that, or I'm being pinned, you know, pinned up against a tree or something, we get it a lot too, you know, cause the law here, I don't know where it is everywhere else, but the law here, it's gotta be within reach, but if you tip over and it's floating around, it doesn't really do you a whole lot of good. So,
yeah. I was in a wreck one time. I wasn't wearing one. I hit a bridge and the only thing that happened to me is I was thrown into the passenger seat, the CD popped out and hit me square in the head.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was lucky. It was actually my drunk grandma who cut me off. God rest her soul.
Yeah, growing up in the 80s, you know, you always see those memes and stuff where it's talking about how tough kids are because I grew up in the 80s and Yeah, I remember my dad would have a few drinks, and he'd put me in the back of the truck. I'm in the truck bed while he's going down country roads. So I was like, yeah, that's, or, you know, laying in the back, you know, on the top of the back seat of the car, because, you know, we didn't have car seats. You know, it was just, it wasn't even a, grew up kind of old school, even for my age. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the things that we did as kids, I would never let my kids do.
Yeah. We're the same age, man. I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. So the and we've kind of touched on a lot of these kayak pedal drives. What are kind of your thoughts on that? Because you just said Old Town, and that to me is like, I love my Mirage drive, but if I were ever to go back to a bicycle centrifugal style, it would like, I really liked the Old Town Native. The Propel's really good too. I had one of those, and that was good, kind of a little unwieldy. Like it always felt like a weapon, like a little dangerous, but I really liked the storage that was in the PDL drive.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that jumped out to me the most about the Old Town PDL is the length of the crank arms. So Old Town uses a little bit of a shorter crank arm, I noticed, and that helps tremendously. Even if you're short legged or long legged, you don't have these big circles. It's a lot smoother. And that was, whether that's how they meant to do it or not, but that was the first thing I saw, because that was certain kayaks, and there's brands that, you know, the seating position matters too. To me, it does. Yeah. So like the Titan X, that Titan X sits really high. So you got that perfect stair step. You got waist, knee, ankle. So you're pedaling down. You're not
pedaling up.
You're not leaning the seat back and doing that because you can't fish laying down. You want a comfortable upright position. You see that fish bust the bank and then he's like, oh, you know, I'm get my pole and then go. No, you want to be able to hit that quick or fish the bank while you're pedaling. That PDL and the Titan X really do that well. And that's the one thing too is the Bonafide, the PWR. That's a very good paddling kayak. And I've got one in the garage here. I got a motor on it. The speed is really good, but having foot controlled steering, a foot controlled rudder with a bow mount motor, that's been amazing. So having it at a low speed, keeping it straight, steering it with the pedals, and then hitting those banks, covering a lot of ground. And that's this new stuff coming out. It's really increasing the value proposition. So prices aren't going down, but they may not be going up as sharply as they have in the past few years. But you're getting a lot more now, I believe, than you did just a few years ago. And so if you're still paying around that same money, but you're getting all of this stuff, and I feel like that's kind of where the future or the short-term future is value. So what am I getting for $15, $2,000, $2,500, $3,000? You know, what comes with that? And then comparing them to these other brands, like, well, this brand has this. And then the next question people got asked themselves, like, am I going to use that? You know, do I need a retractable transducer mount? Do I need side mounts for live scope? You know, if you do, there's a lot of value in it. But if somebody's just carrying two poles with them going down the creek or a little cove, yeah, they may not need that. So that's always a good question to ask. But yeah, you were talking about Old Town, you know, short story long there. You know, the PDL, I was really impressed with it. I love the fact that it floats too.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that.
It feels like it's geared like the best geared, like gear ratio, I guess. You get the most amount of effort and you're not having it.
Yeah.
Like, not to put down the Propel drive, it just seems like you kind of don't get enough out of how much you have to pedal. That and that might just be subjective and the way I pedal and my weight and everything. No,
I've been on some of those older Natives. I think and Old Town does a really good job of this too. Your hull design. I think these companies are starting to learn that a little bit more. So there's some pedal drive models that, you know, you get the, it's not the smooth motion. Old Town does that really well. I think they do have a little bit of a higher gearing. I don't know that for a fact, but having that shorter circle, I didn't feel like I was pedaling more. I felt like I was pedaling less and it was smooth. And we were in high wind situation when I had that out there too. So to me, that was even more of a torture test. And like I said, I was really impressed with it. I would like to see Old Town go a little bit more on innovation. I know the EPDL Plus, I know that's innovative, but I mean, like the Sportsman lineup, I'd like to see them update the Autopilot a little bit more. I would love to see a 55 pound thrust option on the Autopilot instead of the 45 pound, because, you know, you can put a motor guide on an Unlimited or a PWR and be $1,000 less. So yeah, things like that, but just adding that feature, because it's a known quality brand, but just giving more value, you know, having the option to go with a more powerful motor or the option to do this or that. I think that's kind of where I'd like to see it personally. You know, they're all smart companies, so they're gonna do what's best for them, of course. But
I guess I don't quite understand why, you know, and like we said, there's always more people at the bottom of the pyramid. I would love to see right now their highest end model is the like the Predator, the Big Water 132. The yeah. EPDL is now, but the non-motorized, that's still like the best one. It seems like the 120 Sportsman, if it were like had some more features like a Hobie does, like that would be their, you know, their highest top end like tournament platform. But it's
100%.
I've owned it. The 120 is a great kayak, but it's also very simple. It's riggable, but it's very simple, you know.
Very true. Very true. And you know, it's this year it's $28.99. So, you know, for a pedal drive 12, I mean the Titan X 12.5 is $35.99.
Yeah.
So yeah, little
cheap,
things
cheap
like
parts too and things like that. That's one of the things that Old Town really has going for it. Like if you break that little knob that you keep your PDL dry, it's $5. Like,
yes.
There's you know, they that's really keep the prices down on their parts, and it's very affordable for somebody.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little wing knob. They got the little wing knob on the prop. Yeah. That is big because you don't have to have a box full of tools to, you can repair that on the water and then you're gone. Yeah. Like I said, I've got all the faith in the world in Old Town. You know, they've been doing it for a long, long time. Their quality control, I said, they're thick hulls. They're definitely, you can put some stuff on them and you can torture them a little bit more as far as adding weight to it and adding features. But you know, the one thing I noticed on the Old Town PDL was I had a catch board with me. I had nowhere to put it. And I was like, man, like, you know, I'm like putting it on the seat, but it doesn't go too, you know, there's no like, you know, there's things you can do, obviously, but just as the boat sets, you know, we're in 2024 here. So, you know, little things like that, little storage options.
I got one of those Navarre, you know, he makes all the different parts for it, the aftermarket stuff. And he had something that went in a scupper hole that kind of kept my board over to the side more. I could put on like in front of me to the side. So there's aftermarket things, but I like whenever you look at the like Drew Gregory's Scholey, or you look at all these other kayaks that are like really well thought out, and it's like, you know, you can probably do a little Ryan, Mr. Ryan
Lilly, just little bitty, and that's what I meant. Little bitty things. The PWR, the front hatch lid has a little bullwinkle on the front of it, and a catchboard slides in that, so you can just slide it in there. It's out of the way. You still got your open deck. Little bitty things like that. And, you know, again, a lot of people have been doing the double header from Yak Attack. There were two roto grip holders. You can kind of take a catch board and just snap it in there. But, you know, even if there was room just to put it on the floor or under the seat, just something like that. But I just like, I kept finding myself just this thing just banging around the deck. And I'm like, okay. I had it on my lap as I was pedaling it, and I was like, man, I'm not in a tournament. I wish I wouldn't even have brought it with me. But I was like, man, that's kind of a big deal for somebody wanting to carry a catch board or carry, you know, do your friendly local kayak fishing tournament.
Well, like the, you know, here recently, Jackson has kind of leveraged their pro staff too, and they have such a good pro staff. Mm-hmm. Dustin Nichols, regional manager, love that guy. So many good people on that team, and they use their pro staff to help design the Titan X and the NAR. And it seems like Old Town, they have such good people on their team, and they have such a good like warranty and drive and all these other things. Man, like they could make a little bit more well thought out. I guess I'm not putting down what they make because I've owned Better, the Big Water, and the Sportsman. I loved my Old Towns.
You're not the only one that thinks that, though. I've heard that a lot from a lot of people, and you know they have such a cult-like following that I think that they might be able to make a mistake and still sell a lot of kayaks. The EPDL, I think it's a great idea in theory, but and I've talked to other people on this. I think what that kayak's going to do is it's going to sell more autopilots, because at the EPDL, I really would like to have seen them do that on the Sportsman lineup versus the Big Water.
Yeah, and I agree.
You know, and that may be something that's coming. And I think that would be a huge get for the Sportsman lineup, having a Sportsman PDL 120 with the EPDL. That might be a little bit better because not everybody is into the Big Water setup. Again, this gets into stability. You know, the Big Water is a little speedier, a little skinnier, a little more narrow. I paddled a Big Water. I really loved it. But just having that truck out there on the lake, you know what I mean? I'm more space than stability. You know, I like stability, obviously, but having that space, having that, being able to have my gear ends up from my Black Pack Pro onto the deck. You know, I'm fishing, I'm throwing, I'm setting it down, I'm grabbing another one. And then before you know it, I've got tackle and all kinds of stuff all over. So I like that open space there. If I feel cramped, then I start thinking, then that's when you start modifying, you know, things to, you know, mount stuff and get stuff off your deck, you know, like a catch board on the side and things. And, you know, I like you said, the Scholey, the RVR has the little padded, the RVR actually does it where it's canted so you can get the head of that fish, let gravity, just little things like that. I know Old Town can do that, and I'm sure they will.
Yeah, like I'm not putting down their current lineup. Excited to see, like, I would love to see what they could do, you know?
Yeah. And again, the EPDL, I mean, that's a $6,000 kayak.
I get, you know, you put a lot of money into the innovation of designing a new drive, but yeah, the price seems, you know, because they sell them at the dugout, they sell them at your place. Yeah. I'd be, you know, I don't know the numbers of what they're selling, but it seems a pretty tough sell for a lot of bits. And some people, they have the money and they want that's what they want, and they want to pay for something ready to go. They don't want to add the motor or the battery. They want it all in one deal, and that definitely suits a certain demographic and group of people, but it seems pretty niche.
And that's the thing is, you know, a niche kayak for that expense, that I hope it works out for them. I do. I hope it takes off, but most people that are doing that, they're wondering, they still are asking about spot lock. And the autopilot, you get that, you know, to hit a button and just it locks you in and you don't even have to think about wind or current. That's pretty nice. Having an electronic assisted pedal drive, like a cruise control kind of thing, you know, it's nice. It's definitely tapping into that electronic bicycle trend. Which, you know, Northwest Arkansas, that's a really big deal in a lot of other parts of the country. But, you know, are those guys kayak fishing? And that's kind of what I think they're going to see in the next, you know, couple of years is how big that market can be. But I'm more excited to see where that evolves, you know, like putting it into Sportsman or adding like a spot lock capability or something like that to it. So
I remember watching Alex Figuera on his YouTube channel. He was talking to Ryan Lilly at, I think it was ICAST, and he was talking about, he kind of hinted at, I mean, you work at a shop, you might already know things are coming down the line, but
yeah,
he kind of hinted at that. Yeah, this technology is going to be put throughout the lineup, but you know,
that would excite me more than the Big Water, but and again, I'm talking about that from the standpoint of the kind of water that I'm at here. So we're a lot of skinny water. We have big lakes, but you know, to me, the Big Water is going to be good for those offshore guys or you know, cut through that surf, but your big like lake tournament anglers, it may not be the sauce for them.
I don't know anybody that's in one, and
I still don't, you know, I know my rep at Old Town was telling me about when they were testing them out before they went to market, and they sent them up to Maine, and they were going down here, and he hit a stump with one. and it doesn't really kick up. So he hit that stump and it just tipped it over and it just dumped him out in the river. I'm like, yo, that's an expensive mistake, isn't it? Yeah.
they don't have the same breakaway knob there.
No,
that they do on the.
Yeah, it's a different setup for sure.
Oh, is it? Oh,
and if you hit something hard enough, because they're speedy, they're very speedy, and that's a benefit of it. But yeah, if you got that little stump underwater, like he found out, and you know,
yeah,
you're going to be tearing up some props. You're going to be hitting some stuff, and you know, we all get into some water that. You know, may not be the best suited for that, but like I said, I think they'll definitely dial that in, and I think that will. I hope it takes off because, like I said, it's neat to see somebody kind of pushing the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, you want to see that succeed. You know, sometimes things are before their time, or maybe just needed a little tweak. Because Jackson had the E-Drive, Wilderness Systems had the powered Helix Drive, where it's an attachment that you do that, and it's similar. But those didn't really take.
And the Torquedo had the with the Hobie Mirage.
Yeah, the Evolve. Yeah. The Evolve motor.
Yeah, Evolve. Yeah.
Those are pricey, but they sell. So there's people out there that want that. So I definitely understand it, and I definitely hope that starts a new, you know, avenue of innovation and things that they can do. Because they're learning, you know, all the companies are learning from all this new stuff. You know, what worked, what didn't work, how can we improve it? Otherwise, if they just sat around and just didn't do anything, or they just went out and fished all the time, you know, you're stagnant, you're getting left behind. Because there's, you know, ICAST comes up and two other companies have got like this innovation that has all these features and it's cheaper than the kayak you've been pushing for the last 10 years. Yeah, it's a constant moving goalpost. So.
I'd love to, for somebody, because I've always been stern mount since I've had a motor. If I could put like a live scope transducer on a bow mount or like the Old Town, if I could put that on there and not have to have a separate deal on there, I really don't like the switchblade.
Yeah,
I hate things off the side. Like
that's what I started with.
Integrate that with the motor. Like, I would probably, they would probably sell me. I can see Old Town being the company to do that. So
yeah, and even with the Motor Guide XI3, there are some I don't know how much they've done it with LiveScope yet because I'm just now kind of getting into that. But you can mount it directly to that motor head. You know, like your side scans and stuff. That's what a lot of those come with from the factory, is it's got the little clamps that go around it. But yeah, that XI3, that would be a good thing to do it with, especially, you know, a lot of your pedal drives, they have rudder steering already there. So you're kind of set up really nicely for that bow mount. The transom mount, that stern mount, that has been something that's kind of grown like a second wind, if you will. So with Newport and Torquedo and, you know, I've seen some people run both of them. I think that's a little much, but you know, you got a motor.
Come on, Fluke Master.
Having
two motors.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, you know, him and Chad both are kind of, you know, they're working with Bonafide and they're going to rig them up to the max. And Gene, it definitely has an amazing setup there, but I was watching his video on him rigging up this thing, and it's him and a few guys in a shop, and they're tearing this thing apart and they're putting all this stuff on it. And, you know, there's some people around here locally. It looks like they went through the entire Yak Attack catalog and just threw it up on there. It's crazy what you can do to some of these. You know, does everybody need that kind of setup? No, but, you know, the Newports, the speed you can get out of those, especially when you're talking about that NK300, that's a three horse electric outboard.
What's the big Torquedo? The
1103.
And I heard they're, I think they're discontinuing the 1103 and coming out with something new.
Yeah, the new travel motor. It's similar to the 1103, but it's a little more efficient. It's got some upgrades to it that
kind of like the Newport. They did the Pro NK18. Yeah, now they're already out. So. There's such a huge market for that. You know, they're already struggling to keep up with the demand of that.
I went on the website to buy one and then they sold out and now they have them again. Now I'm like rethinking it. Maybe I go up to the 300. I don't know.
And it's, you know, that market, I think I've done more motors this year than I have the previous 3 years on kayaks. Wow. Like, it's just the ease of it. You know, a guy sold his bass boat and he bought one. He bought an unlimited for him and his wife and motorized them both. And we did the cross bridge. That is so Bonafide came out with the Captain's Bridge is what it's called. And it's got two grooves up top there. It's aluminum. It's got the Yak Attack Mighty mounts with the 90 degree. And we can't keep them in stock. And they're having a hard time keeping up with that. We ship them online. So we're selling a few of them a day. So we get a shipment of a couple of dozen of them. We're through that by the end of the week. I mean, people just love that. And I'm just wondering how many of these people are putting these dual graphs on them. You know, they may get it with the purpose of doing that, but you know, that's where it's going. It's definitely, they see that online. You know, let's see, like Christine Fisher with the two, she was the first one I saw with the two graphs. And I think she did it there at Dugout. Yeah. Where, you know, they rig her up one and then showing these two graphs. And then like when she put that video out, I think it was a year or two ago, the first one that she did, the amount of people that were asking me about that, I had no idea what they were talking about. Like, what are you doing with two graphs? Like, cause I was still doing those little Garmin Striker fours on kayaks and, you know, people were loving that. And they're talking about like a two dual TV screens there. I'm like, man. And then Fluke Master, he put a post earlier this year where it had like something with like eight screens. It was just kind of a funny picture. And I'm like, man, I'm like, college football season, that would be really nice. But I don't know what I would use that many screens for. But
to me, talking about two motors, to me, that will, whoever allows that first, that to me is like when I might actually get out of the sport. Like that to me is going to be like kayak fishing, jumping the sport.
Yeah.
Jumping the shark. In my mind, two motors is like, because then I'm thinking.
A lot of people think one motor is too much. But
yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've always said that. I thought, because like the Japanese, they have these little, they're almost like little John boats, but they're single person. It's like a real big kayak. They'll have a small electric outboard and then a regular bow mount trolling motor. And I posted that years ago. Like, this is where kayak, if we don't draw a line in the sand somewhere,
yeah,
this is where we're going to end up. And yeah, I still think
people want it, they'll make it. Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I hope I'm kind of a purist. So I love to paddle. My passion is rivers and creeks. So I love to river fish. I love smallmouth. I love rock bass. And just the scenery, like I said, we're blessed here. We have some really good local waterways. And I see someone like, you know, Chris Funk over there, you know, with
the Farrell in Alabama.
Yeah. And he's doing a lot of paddling videos with the Coosa X and, you know, him and his wife both, and, you know, fly fishing and river fishing. And then you got creek fishing and all these guys with this really good content. And, you know, I grew up fishing on the river. So lake fishing is kind of new to me with just in the last 3 or 4 years here, but I've kind of gone back to that a little bit, you know, that lighter throw and go, you know, cause I always tell people the best fishing stories are those last minute trips, you know, just throw it in the back of the truck, go down there and you get that huge fish in a foot and a half, 2 foot of water. You just couldn't believe was there. But yeah, just things like that. And that's one thing personally, I would like to see them, a lot of these companies go back to, is the river fishing, you know, that skinny water fishing that, you know, you see the Scholey with Crescent and the RVR with Bonafide, the Flint with New Canoe. I know Jackson put the Coosa X out. I love that boat. It's a great heavy kayak.
Good, but heavy.
It's heavy. And it's hard to sell a 100-pound kayak with a transducer plate on the bottom as a skinny water kayak. But if you get it on the water, it feels a lot lighter than it is out of the water, but out of the water is half of it. So, you know, but to me, Jackson revolutionized the kayak, you know, the creek fishing with the old Coosa. You know, nobody really had
a lawn chair seat.
Nobody had much of a dedicated river fish. And then they had the Coosa HD, which was great. And the Liska, which is probably one of my favorite kayaks that Jackson ever made. My personal river fishing kayak's a Jackson Tripper 12. It's basically the wreck version of the Kilroy. So
Kilroy, yeah. That Kilroy, like every time they go to make, they make it, and then I'm like, oh, I don't need one right now, and then they quit making it. And I'm like, oh, damn, I wish I would have bought one.
Man, that Kilroy, that was one of my favorites. And here locally, we have a lot of people have this kind of unfounded fear of the sit-in platform, like. They're afraid that it's just going to fill up and just sink like a bathtub. And like, man, it's like those are, I've never tipped over that kayak. I've tipped over some sit on tops, but it's like, I feel like I'm controlling the kayak versus the kayak controlling me. And that's another thing with too much stability. That kayak is going to want to stay parallel to the water. So if you get in a really choppy water, that thing's going to be rocking and the boat is controlling you versus you controlling the boat. So yeah,
Native Ultimate 2, Native Ultimate, and the
Old Town Next.
My buddy Lance, he has the Wilderness version. What they make one of those hybrid canoe kayak deals too. I really wish somebody would make one where I could put a Newport like that style, you know, canoe kayak hybrid with a Newport or a Torquedo on the back. If I could, if somebody made that. I mean, they'd have to sell it at Dugout, obviously, but if somebody did, I would buy one. I would buy that kayak. I really like the Bonafide Skiff, too, though. That's a cool kayak.
I love that. I love that kayak. To me, the drop-down Skeg is something I'd like to see on more of those kayaks. I think, man, and I don't know anything.
Well, it's a Diablo Amigo. Like, it's a better, more updated Diablo Amigo with a more comfortable chair. And add a Diablo is a great kayak.
I would like to see New Canoe do something with that because New Canoe has those flat transoms on everything. And I would, you know, I always sell them with that, you know, you've got a flat transom that gives you more options for budget friendly clamp on trolling. You know, not everybody needs a 3-horse motor on the back, but it'll handle it. To have like a hybrid kayak, you can even kind of use the Flint design. And then turn it into a little bit of a hybrid, keep it lightweight, have a flat transom on it. That would be really nice. But people like me and you love those kayaks. Just people are still going to go to the Flint and then the Unlimited. And they're great kayaks, but man.
Flint was too tippy for me. I had one. I had to give it to my wife because I couldn't stand up and take a piss out of it because it'd throw me out. But I'm not a light guy. So.
But they changed the – that's one thing they did do this year for the 24s. They lowered the seating position a little bit. That helps. It is a little tippy for like a bigger guy like myself. I really like the 24. They lowered the price $100 and lowered the seating position. And they didn't lower it too much. They just took the back end and just put it down, gave you a lower center of gravity. Because I really felt like a lot like the Cruise 10 when Jackson had it. I felt like the seat height was way too high for the rounded hull that is underneath it. So the bigger guys get into that. And the same thing with the old G Cusa, you know, the original Cusas. Hmm. You get in that and everyone wants to sit in that high position. And watching Drew Gregory go down a creek, standing up on it, just casting is a lot different than someone that's 6 foot, 200 something pounds. And on top of that, and just, you know, taking a drink a few times there.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, and we kept you too long. Really appreciate you being on. Everybody go check out the Bearded Paddler on YouTube. And this show is going to come out a week late, but I hope Drew and the Sholey Palooza and the Adventure Kayak Series, I hope they do great this weekend. I love the idea of that trail. It's not too far from me, but I wish I could fish it, but I can't. My wife would kill me if I add another tournament to the schedule this year. Good luck to them. This show will be a week late, but good luck to them. But awesome. Appreciate you being on, man. Good luck.
Sell
some kayaks and good luck in tournament season.
All right. Same here, man. Same here. Good luck to you guys. Appreciate you.
All right. Be good. Appreciate everybody. Right. See y'all next week.